and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. According to Joe Biden, America's most pressing challenge is the survival of the Kiev regime. His own country's problems are largely secondary. The problem with Biden and all those who support the Ukraine project is the fact that Ukraine has already lost. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Ray McGovern in Raleigh. He is a former CIA analyst. In Washington, we have Richard Cook. He is a former U.S. federal policy analyst, as well as author of Our Country, Then and Now. And here in Moscow, we cross to Patrick Henningsen. He is the editor and founder of the 21st Century Wire. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Ray, let me go to you first here. I know I live very far away, and maybe because of distance, I don't have the same amount of focus that you have. But Joe Biden really spent a lot of time on Ukraine. It was first on the shopping list there. I mean, is that America's most pressing problem right now? After all, it was the State of the Union.
The speech indicated not that Ukraine was top of the list to preserve the regime, but rather that the Democratic Party and Joe Biden were top of the list to preserve the regime. It was quite a shouting match. It was actually an embarrassment. The business about Ukraine was particularly cynical. We're going to support them, yeah, but we're not going to put troops on the ground. They're losing, as you already said, Peter. So what's going to happen? What's going to happen when they lose? Will we put troops on the ground? No. Will we lose the war? Well, we can't lose the war in election year, can we? So what are we going to do? That's the problem. I fear that there's a chance that these dolts, these people who are advising Biden, might tell him, look, a little mini nuke would do the trick. Yeah. You'll show the Russians we're really, really serious here, and preserve the situation until November. And that's, of course, all they care about. November is the target.
Well, I unfortunately, I couldn't agree with you more. They are in panic mode right now. And when you panic, you have bad decision making. You know, Richard, this whole issue about $61 billion, I call it magic money, okay? Because it's supposed to perform magic. There is no evidence whatsoever that kind of money, or even more, that will change the current status of the battlefield. But nonetheless, they want to do it. Is this a money laundering operation now? Richard.
There is nothing new about U.S. financiers getting rich from the deaths of their fellow human beings and the destruction of nations. I mean, if we just, I'm a historian. If you go back to World War I, it was the U.S. banks lending money to Britain and France that financed the Allies in World War I. Most of this money came back to the United States to American weapons manufacturers. The same thing happened in World War II with the Lend-Lease programs, and on it goes. Every war that the U.S. has fought has ended up back in the accounts of the U.S. banks and the U.S. weapons manufacturers. So one of the things that the politicians are using to sell us on the $60 billion additional money to Ukraine is that 50% of this will come back to U.S. weapons manufacturers. And of course, what they're telling us is that, well, this is going to create new jobs, and it's not going to do that. The assembly lines will keep running, creating their incredibly expensive weapons that take years to see through the pipeline. But in the meantime, the big companies that own these manufacturers are the hedge funds like BlackRock or State Street or Vanguard. These companies are also engaged in something called stock buybacks, where the company itself buys its stock, removes it from the market. And that's been legal since it was declared legal under the Reagan administration going way back into the early
1980s. So, Richard, what you're saying, it's good work if you can get it. That's what it sounds like to me. Okay.
It's a scam.
It's a scam. It's a racket. Patrick, it's already been, Ray already mentioned about the boots on the ground. That's always a very interesting thing. We've had a flurry of European leaders totally embarrassed themselves over the last 2 weeks. So who has troops there and who doesn't have troops there? They're contradicting each other left, right, and center. Stoltenberg, the General Secretary of NATO, essentially now says, yes, all this started because of NATO expansion. They can't seem to get their story straight. Patrick.
Yeah, they're panicking. They can't get the narrative straight. Macron sort of threw a wobbler by saying that, we maybe need to deploy unilaterally with our Baltic partners. And that caused panic at NATO HQ and Stoltenberg immediately trying to walk it back, totally insisting that we are not directly involved. We are not a party to this conflict. NATO has never been a party, is not, and never will be a party to the conflict. Of course they're a party to the conflict.
All right, Patrick, let me interrupt you. Since you mentioned the Secretary General there, let me read the quote here. This is in the last news cycle. NATO has no plans to send troops to Ukraine, and NATO's not part of to the conflict, nor are NATO allies. Well, in the same news cycle, I'm still talking to you, Patrick, in the same news cycle, we have Polish officials saying, oh, yeah, there are NATO troops in Ukraine. I mean, this is turning into a circus. This is an embarrassment here. Keep going, Patrick.
What's happening is that they'll say whatever they need to say to each other, to Europeans to each other or NATO members to each other. They're in their own sort of world, which is completely detached from the realities on the ground in Ukraine, especially. The reality is there have been special forces from NATO member states, Navy SEALs, British SAS, Special Boat Service, SBS, other countries. French have had Legionnaire troops on the ground there at various points in this conflict. There's U.S. trainers. They're operating HIMARS, Patriot missile batteries, all of these advisors and so forth. So, of course, they have boots on the ground, but they're not officially doing it. So, therefore, according to them, to each other, they're okay. They can absolve themselves of any direct involvement in the conflict. Of course, we know that's ridiculous. But this is where we're at right now.
Ray, you know, we have, it's been mentioned that they could have official trainers there, you know, under a NATO flag or nations flags, under the assumptions the Russians wouldn't dare. I think that's pretty flawed thinking, Ray.
Well, I think that Putin has made it very clear that if there are troops sent in there, they will probably die. It's very clear that the Russians have drawn a red line here. Putin even used his State of the Nation address to say, look, this is it. We're not going to tolerate that. And please remember, please, that we have nuclear weapons, and actually we have more sophisticated nuclear capabilities than you all have. So don't you get that? Don't you understand that? So this is serious stuff. And Stoltenberg, you know, I remember back in September 7th, it was, he's talking to the EU Parliament. And he says, you know, Putin said to us, here's an agreement. So NATO will not expand. And guess what? We have Finland and we have Sweden. And so look what happened. He said NATO should not expand. We rejected that. And he said this would be a precondition to invading Ukraine, but we said, no dice. So, you know, I call him Doltenberg, but a lot of my Dolt friends don't agree with that. They're embarrassed. So you have Doltenberg and you have people like Fiona Hill with a quite remarkable record of saying, well, you know, they want to kick us out of Europe and New York Times. And here, Hill saying, and don't let the door hit you on the way out there, you know? Well, give me a break. There's no indication whatsoever that Russian troops are prepared or even want to. Why would they want to? Put your move.
Yeah, but Ray, you know, we go to Richard here. I mean, we've heard this again. We have to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them here. Richard, it's a pretty hollow argument right now, because if we look at the lineage of this conflict here, Ray put it very well. I mean, the Russians gave them an off-ramp, and they refused to do it. They refused to even... what the Russians proposed before the special military operation is still operative, but they still refused to accept it. Richard.
Well, again, look at the historical perspective, and I want to go back and refer to Biden's speech that you brought up initially, Peter. To me, it was an example of something right out of 1984, and that was the two-minute hate. Biden, being as delusional as he is, and his speechwriters seem to think that all I need to do is mention Russia and Putin, and the American masses are then going to march in lockstep to approve these tens of billions of dollars going to a fascist government that the U.S. installed in Kiev in 2014. But again, along the lines of the historical perspective, this is something that I put a lot of work into in my book. The idea we must fight them over there to avoid fighting here is absolute, utter nonsense. It's a lie. In fact, the war in Ukraine is the result, as I think many commentators have pointed out, of the aggressive eastward expansion of NATO.
Of course.
That's been going on for a very long time, actually. We can go back to the Clinton.
Well, you know, Richard, I can tell you, I said exactly the same thing, and you know what happened to me? I was thrown off Twitter for 2 years for saying exactly the same. As a matter of fact, to my guests and my audience, I was actually paraphrasing Barack Obama, and now you can say it, okay? It's really quite remarkable here. Richard, hold that thought. I have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Richard in Washington. Unfortunately, we had to go to a hard break, and I interrupted you. Please continue.
I think we have to go back to the great game, which was the long-term warfare that the British Empire was waging against Russia going back into the mid-19th century, because Russia was the center of what this guy named Mackinder later defined as the Eurasian heartland. It's been observed that Britain is even more vehement than the U.S. today in keeping the war in Ukraine going, because ever since World War I, the Anglo-American project for world conquest, and there is a project, has depended on the U.S. for the military muscle to back the imperial plan that Britain still sees itself as heading up. And I think that's really what we're looking at. Ukraine has been identified as kind of the key to control of the Eurasian heartland. They tried to break up Russia in the 1990s. It failed because Putin becoming the catalyst for a Russian resurgence. And that's what they're fighting against. They're fighting to break up Russia and to gain control of the Eurasian heartland for the Anglo-American Empire.
Well, it's interesting, Richard, because Stoltenberg talks about, you know, Azerbaijan, Moldova, and on and on. These people have grand ambitions. The problem is they fail every step of the way. Patrick, I noticed that you were nodding your head when Richard was speaking. Why were you agreeing?
He's absolutely correct. I mean, this is great game 2.0. I think the animus between Britain historically and Russia, certainly for some reason that plays a part in all this. But right now, I think the important thing to look at is looking at Biden's State of the Union speech. he said something that Zelensky echoed on social media, which is that we are holding back the Russian advance. It's because of our aid for Ukraine, Biden saying, because of the weapons we're pouring in. We're keeping Russia from overrunning Europe. This is basically what the President of the United States has said. Zelensky echoed the same thing. So clearly, that's a talking point. We're holding back those Russians. We're saving Europe from the Russian advance. When in reality, if you look at the data from the United Nations and other groups, this is the lowest amount of civilian casualties in a conflict of this scale in the modern era. So clearly, from the beginning, it's kind of obvious. I know Westerners don't want to hear this, but Russia's been meticulous in avoiding civilian casualties, hence this, what they consider slow progress. Meanwhile, Ukraine, NATO, backed by NATO, have been staging provocations further and further into Russian territory and hitting all sorts of different targets. So they're not holding back the Russian advance. Russia is merely being very careful and meticulous in their position, but they're doing everything possible from the NATO and Ukrainian perspective to provoke Russia to advance further into Ukraine. So a lot of this is propaganda. A lot of this is agitation propaganda, or agitprop, which really that's what Kiev is doing now on social media. And this is backed up by the same talking points in Washington.
Well, that's all they have now are talking points here. I'm glad Patrick brought that up, because where the front is right now, that's where ethnic Russians live. Russia has every reason to see the protection of civilian life there. However, there's always casualties in war. You know, Ray, something that you and I have talked about for years is that, you know, when we look at Ukraine, we look at the tragedy in Gaza, these are elite agendas, okay? Because, you know, the President of the United States, if he had any fortitude and honesty and integrity, just get on the phone and say, knock it off, okay? They could do that. But this president won't do it, and these two conflicts are not popular in the sense of with the population. These wars are elite-driven.
Peter, the president is hidebound. Hardened arteries comes to mind. You know, the proof is in the pudding. Even hardliners like Angela Stent and Fiona Hill admit that in April of 2022, 6 weeks after the thing started, there was a deal. No Ukraine and NATO. And we'll talk about Crimea and the rest of the stuff later. There would be guarantees, okay? But no Ukraine and NATO. Okay, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? That was the deal. Does that mean Russia wants to go all the way into Poland and the Baltic and to the English Channel? No, it doesn't. So it's admitted, even by the Ukrainian negotiators, that they had this deal. It was about something else. It was about weakening Russia, as our inept defense secretary admitted at one point. And the Russians realized that. So they're inexorably going forward. The problem is, the war is lost for the U.S. and for NATO and for Ukraine. So what's going to happen next in an election year? No boots on the ground? How else can the West hope to staunch this this advance? As again, I fear that these neophytes, these acolytes of Biden, will say, you know, well, we had those other weapons, but now we have these little mini nukes. Well, why don't we try one of those before the election, and that'll show the Russia, and we'll probably get through the election and show how tough we are. That's what I fear.
You know, Ray, I mean, Angela Stenton, Fiona Hill, I know the article that you're referring in Foreign Affairs, but you know what, Ray, and I say this to my guests and my audience, if we hadn't been taken off of YouTube, I mean RT, we did a program in real time when the Istanbul process was going on. And we were being told an initial deal has already been made. I ran down to this studio and said, oh, my goodness, you know, and we talked about it. And then, because it was never mentioned in Western media, RT as an outlet was banned. Nobody heard about it because nobody reported about it. And then months later, they break it as if it's news. OK, and all of us that were interested in what was going on there already knew that. OK, OK, let me go to Richard. I'm sorry. Speech over, everybody. Richard, I mean, does the United States, and we've had a focus here on the UK, they can't admit defeat, can they? They just can't do it.
No, of course not. No, because the long-term project is global conquest. This was decided at meetings of the Council on Foreign Relations, which, of course, is a clone of British Chatham House, back at the beginning of World War II. It was put in the battle plan for World War II and carried over into the Cold War. It became the Wolfowitz Doctrine in 1991.
Yep.
It became full spectrum dominance in the early 2000s under Bush, and then continuing under Obama, and they've never backed off from that. So it's always a flight forward, as the term has been used. And until the United States steps back and realizes that full spectrum dominance is a formula for endless war, nothing will change. And they'll keep poking and they'll keep pushing and they'll keep seeking a new battlefront, and it will go on and on and on. And that is what has to stop. That's what the American people must put an end to.
Well, you know, Patrick, I've said, you know, the longer this, the more the West continues to support Ukraine, the smaller Ukraine becomes geographically and its demographics as well. The interests of Ukraine have really never been mentioned in all of this. It's always, the focus has been Russia. And that was, you know, the predicate of all this was Russiagate in 2016 and Donald Trump. Go ahead, Patrick.
Stoltenberg himself was banging on, we need to support Ukrainian sovereignty, preserve Ukrainian sovereignty. The tragedy of Ukraine is that it's been stripped of its sovereignty, really, from, if you want to go to 2014 and the Maidan coup, from that point forward, and then the introduction of all these anti-corruption bureaus, all micromanaged by Washington to cover up real corruption, in fact. And so you see the sovereignty of Ukraine being eroded to the point now where they're totally subsidized by Western funding to run their government, to pay their pensions, to run their military. This is the most unsovereign state on the planet right now in terms of having control of its own affairs and being able to manage its own economy. Their economy is shot. The population has fled. They're not coming back. The territory is shrinking. The longer it goes on, the worse it gets. It's time to cut their losses. It's time for everybody to come to the table. But there's some parties that don't want that to happen because guess what? Business is just too good if you're in the right point of business. And that's the main problem that we're seeing.
You know, Ray, Viktor Orban paid Trump a visit in Mar-a-Lago and an interview afterwards. He said that Trump, if he becomes president, not one penny more for Ukraine. How is the White House, the American administration, and the Europeans reacting to that in your mind?
Well, that would be disastrous for the arms trade, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be disastrous
Think any of us are going to cry over that on this program, but keep going.
I have no stock in the arms traders. You know, it's hard to understand what Trump would really do after what he says. NATO is clearly worried about Trump, but NATO is falling apart anyway.
Yep.
Look at the comedy that has existed over the last 2 weeks where the French said we're going to send some troops, and the Germans say, no, you're not. No boots on the ground. Don't even talk about it. And so what is Macron trying to do? He's trying to be just as tough as Biden, right? Okay. And when Ukraine loses, Macron can say, well, it was my fault. And I was really going to point of committing troops. So it's all theater, and the theater is going to become very, very tenuous and very, very, very hard to discern as the election comes into view, because Biden can't afford to lose. I mean, John Kennedy once said that the important thing is never to give another nuclear power a choice between humiliating retreat and using nukes, okay? Well, that's what has come about now with respect to Ukraine. Not from the Russian side. They're winning from the American side. They have a choice between a humiliating defeat or using nuclear weapons. And I have no confidence that those people advising Biden, and Biden himself with these hardened arteries and this notion that Russia must be.
I think I can speak for...
They would make a sensible decision.
I think I can speak for the panel and our viewers. No, I don't think they will make the sensible decision. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Raleigh, Washington, and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.